Hello, and welcome to What's Brewing CISFA. What's Brewing CISFA is a podcast produced for the California Community College's Student Financial Aid Administrators Association. I'm your host, Dennis Schrader. I serve as the 2020-2021 CISFA president.
And I'm Dana Yarbrough, Dennis's fellow employee at Los Angeles Mission College.
What's Brewing CISFA hopes to inform and entertain you 30 minutes at a time.
So, let's start the show. And welcome to another episode of What's Brewing CISFA. Let's start this show with our first cup.
All right, Dana. It's time to fill those cups up because we have a great episode coming at us here.
Yes, we do.
Don't we? I mean, we could recap what the week was, but, you know, it's just another week, another full week. The best thing is next week, not quite a full week of work, right?
Absolutely. Getting ready for Turkey Day.
That it is. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Mom's already doing the prep work.
Oh, good, good. I'll be over whenever you need me, you know.
I'll tell her to make sure to make you a plate.
I understand with these COVID times that, you know, I won't be allowed inside to eat. Mm-hmm. If you just want to put it out on the curb, I'll drive up and pick it up, you know.
I will definitely let her know.
Leave it at the guard gate, if you would.
Okay, I'll tell her.
To your triple gated community.
Yes, and then we'll add a little something.
Yeah, if you would. Yes. That'd be very nice. Tell me if I have to leave any tithing of gifts or whatever to get the meal. But anyways, guess what? We've got an interviewee here today.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, so we want to welcome to the show Ken Lira, Assistant Dean of Financial Aid and Student Support Services and a friend of mine. And he works over there at Irvine Valley College. Or at least he has an office at Irvine Valley College. I don't know if what he does for work. I really don't. But I mean, with a title like that, he does financial aid and so much more. So welcome to the show, Ken. Unmute yourself and we're ready to go.
All right. Well, good morning, Dennis and Dana. Thank you for having me today.
Good to have you here.
Thank you for coming. Yeah.
I'm a regular for your show, so it's kind of fun to see how this works.
Oh, good. Good. It's good to have you with us.
Absolutely. So, Ken, tell us about yourself. Tell us about your background and how you got your start in the world of financial aid.
Well, I've been in financial aid since 1993. Started out like front counter, helping students with their bills and doing outreach, things like that, making sure their financial aid, you know, information was complete. Pretty much just from there, I worked my way up to the systems person in the financial aid office, assistant director, and then director. I've been working in management in public and private, 2-year, 4-year grad schools since about 2000, I want to say. So been pretty much across all segments, maybe except the UCs. I've done some consulting in the proprietary, but, you know, no assignments. But yeah, I got into financial aid because, when I graduated in 93, I needed a job. My wife was going to grad school and I was looking at going to seminary and, I got a 50% ride to Fuller, but I wasn't sure, you know, I didn't want to take out more loans. I just wanted to pay off what I had. So that's why I took a job in financial aid. It was my alma mater at Azusa Pacific. And that just kind of put me on my path to, you know, stay in financial aid.
Oh, man. And, APU, that's my, I say my alma mater, too.
Go Cougars.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I love APU. I had a great experience there. Private schools are awesome.
Yes, they are. And you know, Ken, it's so interesting because you mentioned that you originally wanted to go into seminary.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah, so I was looking to become a pastor. I didn't, things didn't work out with the denomination that I was in at the time. And so I kind of, I started going to a non-denominational church and there really wasn't a formal structure for ordination there. So I was working, so I just, in 2002, I want to say, I ended up going back to seminary and finishing my MDiv. So, I've been involved in church over the years heavily, never like my solo assignment as a pastor. So I've been a youth pastor, a college pastor, things like that, but never a senior pastor.
Well, it's all good. I mean, you're kind of like a pastor on your campus, though. You're the assistant dean of financial aid and student support services. There you go. That's your congregation, your students.
Yes, you get to profess the faith about financial aid and why you should do it.
Yeah, those lovely regulations, right?
And you can also, as you were saying, you can speak truth to the matter about being smart about borrowing. Because I know this from I worked with a person for a while who he's in the IT world. He got his master. He was working on his master's in Divinity 2, I believe, because he was or he has it. I forgot because he was in the Navy. But always stateside, and he was going to become a chaplain. And then he had some issues and some things and decided to give up his, whatever they call it, commission or whatever, after going through and going to Fuller for many years and working at Fuller then in IT. So he kind of transitioned too, but he got stuck with all the loans. So, I know. It's the good thing is at least he moved and transitioned into a business where, he's earning regular money and stuff like that, and he's coming out of his hole, good, thankfully. Good, but no, that's interesting. Yeah, the how we all start in the business always is a interesting thing. You started about the same time as I did. I came out of grad school right into it instead of being like a work study student. I was an RA, so nothing like living in the hall and being 24/7 on call and stuff, right?
It's the life.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you can only do that when you're young. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And that's why even after being a hall director in graduate school and thinking I'm just going to end up working in residence life the rest of my life, I'm so glad I had an internship in my graduate program in financial aid. Because then I saw the lights like, these people go home at the end of the night.
Yeah, right?
There's no beeper that tells them that there's a financial aid emergency or any of that.
Yeah, that 24/7 babysitting is just old.
Exactly. I don't have to do that with my boss now. I mean with my students now. Dan, if any of them emails me at 10 o'clock at night, I'm not getting back to you till tomorrow morning. There can't be a financial aid emergency. I really need it.
Yeah, it's not like we're ER doctors, you know. It's like
even close. Yeah. So, Ken, I know you talked about your studies and how you got in. I believe you're even studying right now. Are you not?
Yeah, I'm working on my doctorate at Grand Canyon University. So I'm in the dissertation phase right now. So I'm still working on Chapter 2. And I've got my goal is to try to get the proposal all approved and stuff probably early spring so that I can do data collection if I can do it late spring, ideally. But I may have to push it out because of my window to fall of 21. So, mm-hmm.
Now, do you already have a set topic you can tell us about?
Yeah, and it's something that's I've been tracking since being in the community college. Before 2010, I had worked mostly at private schools, undergrad, grad type institutions, and then I was working at CSU. But when I started coming to community college, it was really always kind of intriguing to me to see so many people like not apply for financial aid, or those that did never completed their financial aid file. And there's a lot of focus on FAFSA completion and things like that, but much less attention on from research perspective, at least, on the phenomenon of why people don't complete their financial aid file after submitting the FAFSA. So my study is going to be looking at that phenomenon and trying to figure out, from a student's perspective, what are the reasons why. Now I have some suspicions, anecdotally from my own experiences over the last, almost 11 years in financial aid. And actually it is 11 years now, right? No, 11 years next year, 10 years in working at community college. So, from the early work that Tikas did, red light, green light, red tape.
Yes.
Or red light. Yeah.
No, you got it right. Red tape, green light.
That was the early one. And then they did after the FAFSA. That was more interviews, as I recall. Mm-hmm. And then it really kind of came more to a head recently with the Wheelhouse Institute's, money left the table regarding programs, community colleges. They did kind of a quantitative study over like 55 districts out of 72, I believe.
But,
yes.
Yeah. So they found that out. And so, you know, kind of my mission, I guess you could say, is like, I really tried to create greater avenues for access and increasing Pell, Cal Grant numbers, fee waivers, you name it, reducing barriers. So all of this I was working on even before that started happening. But it's starting to come more to a forefront. And you know from CISPA a couple of years ago when we had that kind of discussion, remember, we were all coming up with ideas. Mm-hmm. I think Tamara was talking about that. And Rhonda Moore was there. That was when we were in San Diego.
Yes.
And that's kind of when it started coming more to a forefront. So, you know, good work is happening across, you know, all the districts. It's just, you know, it'd be nice if we would share that and, you know, I mean, share that like that knowledge base or something.
Yes.
So we reference, like I was talking with you about earlier. And then also, you know, the whole guided pathways, you know, mm-hmm. student-centered funding formula, all of that, you know, that's that confluence of all these different, you know, initiatives going on simultaneously is helping to bring, you know, that part of financial aid more to the forefront to,
yeah.
you know, maybe go to minimum federal requirements, not being so strict and rigid on your SAP policies, you know, still being in compliance with the federal regulations, but not being so, you know, black, white, you know, and just looking at things like that, where looking at your business processes, data integrity, technology, staffing, you know, how you do your staffing, you know, and there's a, you know, those are main categories, but, you know, bringing all those things together in alignment to, you know, achieve that objective and get more people paid Pell Grant, more
Absolutely.
People overall, and then more people during the first week of classes. So.
Well, and, you know, thinking about what you're looking at for your dissertation has literally been the conversation on my campus. And I'm certain on a number of others as we're, you know, campuses are looking at budgetary constraints this year and in the coming years, and then also the student-centered funding formula in our community colleges, if you haven't heard of that, or heard it called the SCIF, for SCFF, student-centered funding formula. And so I just had a meeting with my vice president and our VP of Academic Affairs and our president about the whole idea of why students don't apply, why they don't convert or, you know, get through the process. And again, you're right, it's all anecdotal from, you know, years of experience of why we think it is, but it's always been the underlying question that I've always asked myself and wondered, why don't we do some qualitative and quantitative analysis of this and get from students why why you didn't apply? That's always a big question. But, you know, where students also get caught up in the process and why they don't complete, considering we're talking about thousands of dollars on the line,
oh, yeah.
right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking like when you talk about a Cal Grant student who gets SSCG plus Pell Grant, I mean, you're talking, what, 11,000, 12,000, you know?
Yes.
If you get a 15-unit student. So, yeah, it's significant.
Yeah, full-time student. And then even better, if you're a full-time independent student with dependents, your Pell Grant,
yeah.
your Cal Grant,
oh, yeah.
and your
yes.
student success completion grant, that could be $16,000 potentially. Mm-hmm. I mean, of free money to go to community college.
Yeah, that FAFSA filing trends brief that was released by Campus Logic. They talked about, you know, and it's out there in research as well, but they're talking about independent students lagging behind dependent students on filing late, things like that. So, you know, they leave that, and you know, I'm sure, with trying to follow up with those students with dependents
yes.
and trying to confirm that certification so they can get the additional, you know, what, $5,000 or whatever it is. It's like, you know, a little bit of pulling teeth. You know,
it really is. And again, it's hard when you're talking to a president or vice president sometimes, and it's like, why don't they? And it's, you know, as far as internal barriers, most of us are pretty good. And have removed most of them. You know, we've made our processes easier with third-party software to do SAP petitions online. I mean, thank goodness we were ahead of the curve on the COVID stuff because that helped the students being able to get stuff to us, right? As opposed to trying to send it off in the mail and getting stuck in the mailbox sitting on campus and no one's looking at. So we were ahead of the game on that. And then we've simplified. And most of us are not doing much more than what the federal government picks for verification, right? You know, nobody's doing 100% anymore, I assume. I guess it's such a burden. And then, you know, and so many other checks and balances we've worked out too. So I will be very interested to see your research and your dissertation here when you've got it all done and all. Because I think it really is a interesting topic that hopefully will then give us some good information to tell our vice presidents here. Look at this. This is probably very similar to our schools. Now let's move forward on how do you address the issues and hopefully get students back into the pipeline.
Yes, agreed.
All right. Well, we are at that point of the show, Ken. We're going to roll a little music and be back for our next segment.
And welcome back for our second cup segment on the What's Brewing CISFA show. Hit that second cup.
That's right. Ken, you might want to fill up. We did make you do a lot of talking, but that's why you're here on the show. And that's why we're holding you over for the second segment. We haven't had to have an interviewee yet. Tell them, you know, thanks for joining us. We're going to continue with the show now and then go kick them off. And you're not going to be that first one.
Oh, that's good.
Although I'm hoping very soon on a future episode to have my former boss, Pat Hurley, join us.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I've emailed her, and she was more than willing, and then she was talking about, well, maybe she can talk because she's been in financial aid from the early days, that's all I'm going to say, about some of the history of financial aid. So we might make those kind of bonus episodes, Dana. We may do some charting that out and maybe have some bonus episodes and depending upon how much I can get her to talk, maybe multiple episodes and kind of like an oral history of financial aid.
Of financial aid. That would be really interesting. Yeah.
I think so. She's got, again, I was so very lucky. My first job in California in the community colleges was with her at Glendale College. I mean, she got me involved in CISFA. I just talked about this, in fact, at the new financial aid director's training this week. At the end of the show, the last segment or session of the new financial aid directors was a round table. And I talked about how, you know, CISFA involvement is very important to everybody as far as new directors and those who want to be directors.
Hmm.
And I talked about how Pat got me involved early by taking me to all the regional meetings. And so most of the time, most regions across the state of California meet about quarterly, you know, every 3-4 months. Usually somewhere around when the CISFA exec board meets, because then there's information coming from those exec board meetings to the regions. But in the olden days, region 7 and 8, which kind of covers LA and OC, Ken's down in 8, we're up in 7, me and Dana. We'd meet almost every month. So we'd be driving all over the place. So we get to campus, me and Pat go off to the meeting. I'd meet all the new directors, all the old directors, some of the assistant directors, because that's what I was at the time. And you just got to learn so much more about the about your region and needs of LA and OC. And such. And Ken, I think that's how we probably met many a time.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, it's very satisfying to have those regional meetings. You get a lot of feedback, bounce ideas, you know, and like I said, you know, a lot of what we try to do is norm our processing to other schools. So
exactly.
You know, that's a vital element of those meetings. You could talk through things, make sure you're not crazy. Things like that.
It really is. It kind of is a bouncing board without going outside, because I know some people are like, well, I'll just call the Department of Ed. And I don't want to say no too loudly, like, no. But you want to make sure that you're couching and gauging who to bounce ideas off. And I think when you do it local, keep it local. You're right. I think you get an idea. I know we've talked a lot. You know, others, financial aid directors will bounce some ideas off and go, hey, my school's thinking of doing it this way. Or what do you guys do for your PJs for this or that, you know, I mean, I'm trying to be real broad here, but it gives you an idea of what's going on in other schools. And you're right. Am I crazy that I'm being asked to do this or that I'm thinking I need to do this? Because people would like to think that, well, everything's written into the law and all the regulations are there, but there's so much room for interpretation.
Exactly. You know, and you can go to NASPA's knowledge base and stuff. You can research the regs, go back to CFRs and stuff. You know, heaven forbid you have to go back all the way to the higher education law itself. But exactly. Yeah, that's why going to those regional meetings and even, you know, association meetings, when you used to have those FAR meetings, yes. Those were just another, you know, opportunity to really kind of dig deeper into, like, you know, well, what do you think about this or why this? And basically trying to come up with a workable solution that, makes sense.
And for those who don't know, Ken, you've been a regional rep before. And that's just a great position within the association, again, you're going to you do the exec board meetings and then you kind of run the local meetings.
Right. Yeah. Very rewarding. Very helpful.
Yeah. And we also get to see all the different campuses. I think we've been to Irvine a couple times in the past.
Yeah. Yep. One time when I was the Region 8 rep. I think. First go rep. Yeah.
Absolutely. And Dana, I have to say, LA Mission has not got to host too many times. And there's a reason for that. If you look at the map of the schools, us hosting is like asking people to drive to Alaska.
Oh, okay. We don't want to do that to them.
Hey, no. I think you're closer, though, Dennis, than Pierce College, right?
We might be slightly closer than Pierce College to the center of all the schools. So in the recent years, as we've gone to quarterly meetings, we've tried to stay as central as possible, which generally, for whatever reason, ends up being Cerritos College.
They're exactly. Kind of, yeah. That's about central for Orange and LA counties, yeah, everywhere.
Exactly, because you think we have schools. I think Saddleback is probably the most south of all the schools.
Yep. Yeah, Saddleback is, yeah.
We've got Mount San Antonio and then Citrus. I always forget which one's farther out. I think Citrus, maybe.
Gosh, you know what? It's like they're almost straight up and down.
So you've got those two on the far northeast. On the northwest end is Pierce College, and then we're kind of on the northern end. But then it's just also an issue of trying to get some schools to host. Sometimes it's a little tougher. Cypress sometimes scheduling. Compton is in the middle there, but again, they used to be part of El Camino, so we'd meet at El Camino, which is more or less central too. You know, try to find some school that's at least close enough to a highway. But yeah, we've had some schools that I don't think have ever hosted, and if we ever get back to seeing one another again in person, hopefully, we'll have to rope some of these schools in.
There you go.
You know, I have to say though, Dana, this is why you have to become a regional rep. Is once we are back to hosting in person, we have to always ask our person down at Orange Coast College to host, because we don't go to their main campus. Why would we do that? They have a school of sailing and seamanship.
Okay. Yes.
That's out on the harbor right near Balboa Island and Lido Island and all that.
Wow. Right off PCH, yeah.
Yeah, nice. So it's right off PCH. So you're in beautiful country land there by the water. And our meeting room overlooks the bay.
Wow.
So, yeah. That, and she always gets a ton of food for us. So, you know, I mean, you can't top that. Food and coffee, open up the patio doors and get a little breeze. And occasionally you see all the kids that are doing the like the sailing program. So they're like all these, you know, buff girls and guys working on the sailboat, either cleaning it or, you know, whatever. Because they have like a gigantic sailboat down there.
Wow.
I asked Tanisha, who's the director of financial aid there, I think someone had donated it at some point. So they got, what a lucky school, huh?
Yeah, it is.
I'm wondering how I get our sailboat for our school. Well, we're not near a lake, though, you know, unfortunately. Well, we're at that point. We're going to fade ourselves in here for our last segment, everyone. Let's have a little musical break. And just like that, we are ready for our last sip. Segment.
There we go.
That's right. So, Ken, you know the drill. You've listened to the show many a time. You're one of our regular first-time interviewer, multiple-time listener. We do our I Dare You To selections here. So let us ask you, do you have an I Dare You To for our listening audience?
Well, you know what? I was thinking about this, because I don't have any particular musical thing that came to mind. But I thought, you know what? One thing that's kind of fun, I enjoy, is going on road trips.
Okay.
So, just exploring different parts of the country. So, you know, with this COVID thing, and isolation and stuff, you know, it's kind of the norm. You know, maybe just getting out, you know, because you're going to go stir crazy staying home and just, you know, sitting in front of your computer all day. Absolutely. And not moving, you know. They talk about the COVID-15, you know, about, you know, probably because, and it's true. I mean, you know, you basically sit at your house all day unless you get out, exercise or something, stay active. And a road trip's good, you know. I mean, so this weekend we're going to go pick up some puppies in Grand Junction, Colorado. And so we're going to take a road trip through southeastern Utah. So
that sounds awesome.
Yeah, I've never been through there.
What kind of puppies are you getting?
Well, a couple of Jack Russell puppies.
Okay.
So, nice.
Yeah, the breeder we got our previous puppy from, one of them, moved up to Grand Junction. So we're going to drive up there. I'm taking off next week too, Dennis, like you.
Good.
I'm going to head up there and be back before Thanksgiving. So
that's going to be a nice trip.
Oh, yeah. It'll be good.
Now, stop
by Arches National Park, Navajo National Monument. Yeah,
oh, wow. So. Now, does the Jack Russell remind me, is that the dog from Frasier?
Oh, yeah.
The little dog.
That's Eddie. Yeah. Yep. That's Eddie.
Half of our audience, anyone under the age of like 30, is like, what's Frasier? Well, easy. There was a show that guy from Cheers was on. And then the next question is,
what's that Cheers? At time, that was like the second best comedy. Seinfeld, you couldn't beat Seinfeld.
It was a different. It was a different type of semi-highbrow, right? I mean,
yes.
Seinfeld is a kind of highbrowish, different style of, you know, it's that Larry David thought, school of thought. And then there was Frasier, which between him and his brother Niles or whatever, very highbrowy kind of people, but obviously living in the real world, which was always kind of funny. That little dog, if you remember the show, everyone, that's what Ken's got coming at him there.
Now, Dennis, now I'm curious, do you guys watch Curb Your Enthusiasm?
I'm not a regular because it's on one of those services that I'd have to pay another subscription fee for.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. It's very much like Seinfeld, except with the swear words.
Yes.
Yeah, I've seen it. I mean, I get some of it, but it's not my whole line of humor. But when I've seen the episodes, it's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's the best. It's good stuff. Good stuff.
It's that neurotic kind of humor thing that, only Larry David could pull it off.
Yeah, only he could pull it off. Yeah.
Right. I mean, yep.
In some ways, it makes Seinfeld pale in comparison. it's an interesting thing. Well, thank you, Ken. We're going to take that to heart, hopefully, everyone. And hopefully everyone hits the road and has some fun. But that's about all we have time for today overall. But don't forget, there's always our next episode. So I want to thank our guest, Ken Lira of Irvine Valley College, and my co-host, Dana, for joining us today on What's Brewing CISFA. And thank you, our audience, for tuning in.
And hey, everyone, remember to check out the CISFA website at CISFA.org. That's CCCSFAAA.org. You will find our Twitter handle on our homepage, so please follow us on Twitter.
And for this and all What's Brewing CISFA podcasts, find our feed through Google Podcasts at podcasts.google.com and search for CISFA. For those using Apple devices, search for CISFA on the Apple Podcasts app. And you can always find our episodes at wbcisfa.podbean.com. That's wbccsfaaa.podbean.com. That's pod and bean is one word. And don't forget to find us also on Spotify.
You can send us feedback or feed us topics you want to hear on the show. Email us at wbcsfa@gmail.com.
What's Brewing CISFA is a production of Studio 1051, a creative collaboration of me and Dana.
This has been episode number 39. recorded the morning of Friday, November 20th, 2020.
Have a great day.
And have a great weekend.
All right, everybody.